Today we need to talk about pornography. So a little warning, what follows might not be suitable for younger listeners. We know that domestic and gender-based violence is a problem here in Ireland. Women's Aid says that last year reports of all forms of abuse against women rose. And we also know that those figures, they may be understated because many victims will never report the abuse that they've experienced to the Gardaí or to one of those national helplines. And so many experts in the field are telling us that there is one thing that is helping to drive these scary increases. It's pornography. This is News Talk Daily. I'm Ciara Doherty. I want you to have a listen for a moment to Sarah Benson. She's the chief executive of Women's Aid.
Pornography is the elephant in the room. It is impacting on young people's exposure. It is giving sexual scripts to children before they ever so much as hold the hand of somebody they fancy. But it's also showing up in our domestic violence services. Strangulation has now had to be legislated for, and pornography is behind that.
And Gemma Kelly, she's from CEASE, that's the Centre to End All Sexual Exploitation, and she agrees with Sarah.
Pornography industry is grooming men and boys to perpetrate sexual violence, and it is grooming girls and women to accept it and to think that it is a normal part of sex.
And the issue has been raised in the Dáil by, among others, Gary Gannon of the Social Democrats, who says online influencers are poisoning young men with misogyny.
We've allowed this violence to grow, and I'm fearful about where it is headed, because we are now living in a culture where perpetrators are abused and not only tolerated, they are celebrated. They are the President of the United States, sports stars and multi-million euro contracts. They are influencers poisoning our young men with misogyny packaged as self-help. This network of anti-women communities online, full of grifters, abusers and con men, is flooding social media with hate.
So today we're asking, what is driving what some have called this epidemic of pornography, and what can we do to tackle its influence when it comes to our children? I'm delighted to be joined by family psychotherapist Dr. Richard Hogan. Richard, you're very welcome to News Talk Daily. Pornography, it's almost as old as civilization itself, but when did it turn from something that was in the shadows, that was on the margins, into the phenomenon that, if experts are to be believed, Richard, it is everywhere in society?
Well, it is everywhere in society, Ciara. And you're right, you know, and I don't come from this as a puritanical, prudish, kind of overly religious zealot position. I come from this as a clinician working with families and with teenagers and with adults. And so pornography has irrevocably changed and transmuted over the last 10, 15 years. And it's particularly problematic, Ciara, for developing young brains. And with the arrival of the smartphone and ubiquitous internet connection, hardcore extreme material is only one click away. And that's the problem, Ciara. It's not, you know, pornography in the 90s, you would have seen it on Friends. It was kind of normalized. When I grew up, it was kind of like, you know, Euro trash. It was kind of like irreverent stuff. But it has completely changed over the last number of years. And it's all about the degradation of women. It's all about spitting and choking and having consent taken. And so these guys who develop this, these content creators who develop these, like Pornhub and Alo, the parent company, these guys know very well how to fire dopamine. And so they make their images more extreme and more extreme and more extreme, because they know that when dopamine's firing, it is the anticipation reward center of the brain. So you'll go seek it more and more and more. And so they make their material more extreme and more problematic for a developing brain. And so there's the issue here. It's everywhere. It's embedded into everything. And it disrupts. This is the problem I see, Ciara. It disrupts, you know, really healthy intimacy. You know, to be sex positive, Ciara, this is the message that people need to hear. To be sex positive, you have to be porn critical.
What do you mean by that?
People often have the idea that, you know, sure, it's a bit of harmless exploration, you know, it's only curiosity. And that's why we're there's a bit of benevolence about it. You know, that's only a bit of curiosity, that's only normal adolescent curiosity. And I'm saying, no, yes, that we all have sexual curiosity, particularly when we're children and particularly when we're developing. That's all really normal. But it's what they're satiating that with, that desire, that normal curiosity, that healthy exploration of your sexuality. And, you know, all of those ideas that are really around in your adolescence and early childhood, there, you know, later childhood and early adolescence, to meet that curiosity with porn, to meet that curiosity with strangulation, to meet that curiosity with, like, you know, consent taking and women liking to be choked and to be spat on, to be the degradation, that part of it, that is what I'm saying, to be sex positive, to be celebrating your sexuality and to be meeting that with a normal curiosity and not to have it met with this pornified view of sexuality which has been foisted on our children.
Is there such a thing, Richard, as a healthy relationship with pornography or a safe type of pornography?
The question is there ethical pornography? In my research, I would say there probably isn't. And I've worked with Ruama and I've worked with Women's Aid and I talk a lot with those, you know, with those agencies. And I've talked a lot with girls who've been trafficked into the sex industry in Ireland. And I've interviewed many of the girls who've been trafficked into the sex industry. And pornography is fueling it massively. And many of the girls who are in, who are actually caught in the pornographic industry are trafficked in there and against their will. So is there ethical pornography? I would probably say I don't think there really is, Ciara.
You said there that when you watch this pornography, there's a dopamine hit. That's what they know. And then you seek out more and more extreme forms because presume it's, you know, like smoking or alcohol, you know, you have to change what you consume to get the same hit again. That's the idea. But are we predisposed to, or why are we predisposed to seek out that extreme content in the first instance?
Because it's exciting, you know, it's exciting and kind of like something that you're doing on your own, all that kind of stuff. And it can be a little bit of that, the taboo aspect of it can be exciting too. You know, you're doing something that's a little bit off center. You're consuming something that's just a little bit, you know, not for everyone's eyes. And kind of stuff. All of that is kind of like exciting. And as I said, the anticipation reward center of the brain does fire. But here's another important part about doping that people don't understand. It programs memory. And so that's designed from evolution. When we say we find food, or dopamine would fire to remind us where we got the food from. And so when we become sexually aroused, dopamine fires, but also our memories gets programmed so that when we get aroused again, we go back to the same place. And in fact, we go down to a deeper place and we go further and further and further. So there is a psychological aspect to this that's definitely a component in the compulsion and the addiction of going into pornography, but that these content creators are very, very aware of. And that's why they make content that is taboo, that is extreme, that is against kind of like normal kind of ideas there, because that's exciting for somebody up in their bedroom on their own when they're young and all the rest of it, or even as an adult. And so that's why we are kind of predisposed to consume that kind of stuff.
And when it comes to those who are watching it, who are using it, is it still mainly men and boys we're talking about?
Yeah, it would be mainly men and boys, really, yeah, to be honest. But girls obviously are consuming it too, but it impacts on girls in different ways. Ciara, if you sat in my clinic, it's really sad, you know. I hate talking about pornography. I hate talking about it, you know, because it's something that I feel very strongly against and we need to advocate for. But I hate talking about this issue. But we have to talk about it, because I sit with so many teenage girls in my clinic who tell me what they were asked for in a relationship with the boy that they liked, you know, some boy that they fancied and they were going out with and all the rest of it. And then all of a sudden this act was tried to be performed in them, but also, and they're confused by that, but also I have so many boys, because I am vocal about this, Ciara, who ring me, who ring my clinic and ask for help how to get out of this issue, because they're stuck in it and they don't know any way out of it and they don't know how to be intimate with anybody anymore. And it's like, what a terrible indictment on all of us that's what's happening to our children. And you know, Ciara, you know yourself, because you're reporting on this long enough to know the gender-based violence in Ireland, the statistics there. The starting point here is removing violent content from children's psyche.
But is there irrefutable, conclusive evidence now, Richard, or is it still debatable, that links watching this pornography with increased forms of violence towards women?
I know there absolutely is. The research is very clear. Look at the SERPRI, you know, the Sexual Exploitation Research Policy Institute there. Have a look at their research. You know, it's very clear, Ciara. Look, Boy A in the Anna Kriegel case had consumed bestiality and BDSM torture sexual contact in thousands of images, and at 13 murdered his classmate who was 14, you know, and performed some to her, you know. I mean, it's just a terrible case, but we have it in our country here. It's not that every boy who consumes this will become pathological here. It's not that. Like, you know, not every man who drinks a beer will become pathological in their alcoholism. But if there's a seed of vulnerability there, if a child is growing up in a particularly problematic environment, or there's a little vulnerability in them there, that's when this thing can really take hold and warp how they view girls, warp how they view intimacy, and warp their ideas about how they can take intimacy when they want it. And so we have to cut it out as a matter of urgency. We have to follow France. We have to follow their lead. And if we're any way unsure about what these people who provide it, have a look at ALO, the parent company, you know, of Pornhub and all these sites, when they were pushed to bring in when the legislation came in to push them to have age verification, they just said goodbye to France, we'll pull out of it because we're not going to put up with this. They're trying to put pressure back on France. They don't want children off their site. They want more children consuming their pornography because that's revenue.
So is it then people who have some sort of predilection to violence or some impulse control issue who will become more violent in their thinking towards women and their actions towards women if they view this type of porn?
Well, you know, it can take any child at any time. It can grab them out of their family and warp their minds. That's the reality. I mean, those lines I just used there are actually Ted Bundy's lines. He said before he was executed that pornography came into his house and took him out of his house, out of his middle class house, and warped his mind, right? And he's one of the greatest, you know, perpetrators of crimes against women that we've ever known. And so he would say that a commonality there is pornography. But in my study, in my research, and in my clinic, I would see kids who come out of, you know, dysfunctional backgrounds are more susceptible. But doesn't mean that a child coming out of a functioning childhood and background won't be disturbed by this. If there's just a seed of vulnerability in their care, if someone isn't capable of managing this stuff and has maybe a little bit of a history in the family there of addiction, and there's a little bit of dysfunction in the family, it's probably just a bit more problematic for that developing psychology than it would be for another psychology. And we just have to stop it. It's just a matter of urgency, because I've worked in a school where a senior infant consumed it, and we just have to say, well, that's dystopian, and we have to let our children to explore their sexuality in a nice, healthy way, because intimacy is so important, Kira. That's why I get so passionate about it, because I meet it in couples therapy. Intimacy is so important for a healing, healthy relationship. If you allow pornography to come in there and disrupt that, it leads you down into a very isolated, a real dangerous cul-de-sac.
Yeah, tell me about those young boys that you speak to, that you try and help in your clinic, Richard. What are they saying to you?
Oh, God, Kira, honestly, I mean, this is not hyperbole. I get calls into my clinic, you know, every second day, and I get emails to me personally, and I get messages on Instagram because they hear me talking about it. And I'm only thinking about a conversation I had there driving down the road there yesterday. A boy rang me and my secretary put him on to me. The conversation is about how they got caught into pornography. And this boy in particular was 8 years of age when he started consuming it. And a friend brought it into the house and he watched it, and then of course got excited by it and then started watching it himself, and then he went off down into this, and he said, you know, he's watching kind of taboo stuff. Now, he didn't say exactly what the taboo stuff was, but that's the way it goes. It goes down more, as you said yourself, you get caught in, you go deeper and deeper and deeper and deeper. That's the problem, Kira. That's what's happening to our boys. And we're all standing around thinking, well, let's hopefully this experiment works out and hopefully they'll be fine. But no, they're not going to be fine, because this stuff destroys their concept of themselves and their, you know, relationships with people and such important stuff, Kira, but it is really disrupting it.
And I know something that really worries you, Richard, because we've spoken about it before, are these self-generated images?
Yeah, absolutely. There was a study there that came out of the Internet Watch Foundation there, where I think it was 275,000 images, 92% of those were self-generated. Now that was between 8 and 10 year olds. That's the early sexualization of our children, Kira. I just can't believe there's not more people standing up and saying, you know, my God, we're sexualizing our children. We're feeding them a pornified view of intimacy. And then we're wondering why there's problems here with, you know, gender-based violence, and why our boys are developing kind of, you know, unrealistic expectations in relationships, or why they're so lonely and isolated, or why they're up in the bedroom all the time. Because it's massive. If you talk to any teacher, which I do a lot, it's huge problem in schools, is kids going onto pornography in the toilet and that, and even in classrooms, because it's right there on their phone.
You said a little earlier that women do look at explicit content. We know that, but perhaps not the same numbers.
Yeah.
Can you explain explain why there is such a gender gap usage?
Well, I suppose, now, when you're looking at those statistics, I think it was like 64% of women and it was, you know, like 90-something percent of men, I think, in that the study that I'm thinking of there. But of course, there will always be a little bit of, like, you know, social desirability, and it's more acceptable for a boy to consume pornography. And so it's kind of like seen as a kind of almost like a rite of passage for boys to be consuming it. And I suppose girls mightn't be as driven sexually in those early moments of, like, you know, adolescence as boys would be. You know, different chemicals going on in their brains there. I just think the whole societal aspect here is driven towards feeding boys pornography more than it is for girls.
You spoke about what's been happening in France, and I know they tried to bring in these age verification laws that would make it a lot more difficult for young people to access Pornhub or YouPorn or any of those websites. And I know then they pulled out, the companies actually pulled out of France. But I see in the last couple of days that they've actually gone back into the market in France because the courts there have suspended those laws because they're investigating whether or not it's actually compatible with EU legislation. What do you make of that?
That actually breaks, it really is, that's demoralising, Kira, because I was so proud of France there, and I was so proud of the minister there who stood up and said au revoir to them. She said, all the better if they leave. And that's what we need our government to do here in Ireland, because that would show you these guys, they didn't want to leave. They pulled out to put pressure back on the French government. I wrote about that in my article in the Irish Examiner. They were only trying to, like, you know, tight arm France and the government, and, you know, the law looking at that now, and maybe looking at European law. That's the thing that really gets me going, Kira, is because whenever I talk to politicians in Ireland, they'd always say, well, we have to keep in tow with European law. Really? Do we not have to put our children first here in Ireland? Do we not have to put our children first in France? And why do we have to keep in, you know, I know there's, you know, you're a lawyer and all the rest, you'd probably have some ideas there legally about what that's about, but we have to stand up to this stuff, and we have to say enough is enough. That poison they're feeding us, that has to stop. And let's be honest, Kira, you know, we stopped everybody in this country from moving 2 kilometres during COVID. If we want to turn off pornography, we can bloody well turn it off. If we want to, if there's political will. And that political will comes from, like, you know, people like myself and yourself having this conversation, and parents standing up and saying, no, that's what really creates political will. And we have to, for once and for all, put our children first, not profits, because they do generate huge money, but not profit or children.
Yeah, it is a massive multi-billion euro industry. We have to remember that. I know there'll be parents listening in today thinking, I don't know what to do. I'm trying my best. I try to supervise the phone. I try to make sure I know what they're watching on the laptops. But I feel like, you know, I'm up against something that's too big for me to handle. I don't know what they're going to be doing in the schoolyard. I don't know what they're doing when they're going on play dates. What can parents do?
No, it's a very good question, Kira. And I don't want parents to feel hopeless. It's not too big for you, but of course you can't, you know, be hypervigilant 24/7. Your child is going to go out into the world. They're going to go into other houses. The cousins and nephews are going to come into the house. They are, I'm just going to say it out, Kira, they're going to consume pornography. I hate to say that, but they are going to consume it, whether they want to or not, whether it's intentional or not. It's going to be fed to them, or they're going to search it out, or someone's going to show it to them. That's just the way it is, right?
Okay, so but trying to ensure your child doesn't watch pornography, draw a line under it. That's not realistic.
No, that's not realistic. But I'd have conversations with them, and I watch my reaction, because I've worked with so many families, Kira, who mothers particularly, who were absolutely devastated when they found out what their child had been looking at, you know, and what they consumed, and they found it actually almost hard to look at their child now. And I'd say, watch your reaction to it, because it would be almost unlikely that they wouldn't have consumed it, right? It'd be almost like very difficult not to consume it now as a young person on TikTok and Instagram and all the rest of it, and on YouTube. And so I'd say, watch their history, talk to them about it, and have a good relationship with that. If they do see something that they can come to you, that you're not going to be judgmental, that you're going to help them process what they saw, because they don't want to see something like that either, someone being choked or tied up or beaten. They don't want to see that kind of stuff, and so they know how to process that. And so having an open relationship with them and talking to them about and taking the stigma out of seeing it will actually help them to come to you when they see something that, you know, disturbs them.
Do you think you should watch it with them?
No, I wouldn't be watching pornography now personally with my child, if I'm being honest. I wouldn't be suggesting that. No, I wouldn't. I good relationship with my child. I have 3 daughters. a good relationship with them where you explain to them the things that they could possibly see. I talk in schools about this a lot, and I talk to them about the ethics behind it and about the people that are used in these videos and the idea of sex trafficking and, you know, people who have been trafficked into these. And I talk to them all in first year and second year because they're quite ethical, these kids at these age. You're trying to show them that this isn't actually benign. You know, you're actually feeding an industry that in a lot of ways there's girls who've been really badly abused here. And so you're trying to show them that there is something to your viewing of this, and you have some power here by not viewing it. And so I'd have those conversations with them, and just open conversations and not overreact when they've seen something, and check their history. There's loads of things, custodial there. There's loads of things that you can put on the phone to see and cut off, you know, apps and make those apps not available to them and all the rest of it.
All right, Richard, thank you so much for joining me on News Talk Daily. Fascinating as always.
Thanks, Ciara.
I'd really like to hear your thoughts, your opinions on what I think is a really important conversation that I've just been having there with Richard. So do send me an email at any time. It's newstalkdaily@newstalk.com. Well, that's almost it from Newstalk Daily. But before we go, if you've been affected by any of the issues that were raised on today's podcast, you can contact Women's Aid's 24-hour national free phone helpline, the number 1800 341 900 or womensaid.ie. And the national male advice line, that's 1800 816 588. Until the next time, stay safe.